Physician Informatics Jobs Podcast.
Welcome back to the Physician Informatics Jobs Podcast. This is episode 4. I'm Jeff Nielsen from Kettering Health Informatics Fellowship Program in Dayton, Ohio. Today I was able to interview Mark Zhang from Brigham and Women's Hospital. He was really active with AMIA Clinical Informatics Fellows leadership early on and was part of the group that started it. And he continues to be a very successful clinical informatics physician and has what I would consider a dream job for informatics. He is a brilliant guy at a great institution. As he talks, you'll see he attributes a lot of his success to luck. Obviously, you have to be in the right place at the right time, which is the luck part. But you'll see how good Mark is at weaving his success stories into the interview, and that he's a very capable guy and does the right amount of self-promotion. He's found a lot of success in his work just as he left his fellowship, and they're taking more and more advantage of him to do informatics work at Brigham and Women's. His success is obviously due to his capability, which he showed prior to graduating, and now he additionally with this big team that he's built around him. Here's the interview.
Interview.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. It's a real pleasure.
Yeah, I was excited to talk to you because we've talked in the past and I've enjoyed our conversations and I've seen you do a lot of great things for informatics, not just for yourself, but for the community. So that's one of the things I was thinking wanted to hear from you about.
Glad to be here.
So tell me more about, tell everybody on the podcast a little about yourself.
Of course. So I'm Mark Zhang. I'm a internal medicine physician, a palliative care doctor, and a clinical informaticist. I'm currently the associate chief medical information officer at Brigham and Women's Hospital, focused on digital innovation. And I run a group called the Digital Innovation Hub, and we are the Center for Digital Health Innovation. We're about an 8-person team within IS, and we focus on kind of 4 big buckets of work. We do kind of solutions delivery in the innovation space. So that could be custom developed applications. So during COVID, we created a lot of COVID attestation tools that actually we still use for both our employees and for patients and visitors. We also implement vendor-based solution. Our wayfinding solution at the Brigham and now at Faulkner was a vendor solution that, you know, kind of did the full stack on. We found the solution, did the pilots, implemented it, and then ultimately scaled it. The second bucket of work we do is we are a internal kind of subject matter expert for anything digital, particularly if any researcher, clinician, or staff member at the Brigham has an idea in digital health, they can come to us and we'll do what's known as an innovation consult and try and help them get to the next step. And a lot of the folks that come to us are very early, you know, back of the napkin ideas. I want to make an app for XYZ, and we'll, you know, listen to what they want to do, try and support them as best we can, make the connections, give resources. And with that kind of support, which is longitudinal, we've helped people create companies, create products, you know, create their applications for research, and we try and support them throughout the whole. The third thing we do is we're a front door for external companies that want to engage with the Brigham and potentially do innovative things. So certainly from early stage startups to kind of established companies in the healthcare space, they can reach out to the iHub and we help make kind of the connections and the connectors. We function as a true hub for these things, particularly in the realm of digital. And the last is we try to be a lighthouse and a good community player for just digital health within Boston and across the nation. So we historically before COVID would host an event every quarter, partnering with either a local group like Mass Challenge or more national groups like Y Combinator or Microsoft or other groups. And really the idea is to just make sure people in the community know that, one, our group is here to support digital innovation, both at the Brigham, but across the state and certainly the nation. And two, we want to make sure that people, we have a reason. So that's a little bit about what I am kind of doing currently. My background is I did medical school in Erie, Pennsylvania at Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine. I did my medicine residency in Pittsburgh at Allegheny General. I did a chief year. And then afterwards, I came to Boston and did a palliative care fellowship at Mass General, Dana-Farber, and then was the first informatics fellow at Brigham Women's, now the MGB Clinical Informatics Fellowship. And after that, stayed on at Mass General Brigham, at the Brigham specifically, as the Medical Director of Digital Health Implementation, and then eventually Medical Director of the iHub, and now in my current role as ACM. That's me in a nutshell.
Okay, so that's pretty amazing. So let's focus on sort of the trends. So although I could ask you about any one of those things and talk about it for an hour, our listeners are interested in the sort of the transition from fellowship. So you finished fellowship already with two specialties.
Yep.
And so you did a 2-year fellowship at ACGME, right?
We were not ACGME at the time, but we were in the second batch. So it was the year after Stanford was when the Brigham fellowship started. But we didn't get ACGME accredited until like 3 years ago. So.
Okay. So you grandfathered in.
Yeah.
You applied for the grandfather plan and then they gave it to you. Okay, that makes sense. So how'd the transition work for you to leave? And what did you do during fellowship to kind of to get you there?
No, it's a really, really great question. And I think, I think informatics as a whole is so broad that you have to come in with at least some kind of idea, ideally, of what you ultimately want to get out of those 2 years. And for me, the reason I did the fellowship, number one, it's fascinating. My whole career has just basically been like one. It's been a lot of luck and being in the right place at the right time. That is the story of Mark Zagata. I didn't even know palliative care was a specialty until I was an intern at Allegheny General. And at the time, I thought I was actually very committed to Palm critical care. I still love intensive care, and I love that clinical field. And I kind of did all my electives focused around pursuing a critical care kind of subspecialty training. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was doing one of my ICU rotations, and I was on like a post 30-hour call. I was waiting in the fishbowl, and I consulted this new service, palliative care, for one of our patients. And I saw the clinician do the work, and I remember seeing that person going, oh my gosh, like that is like why I came into medicine, what I do. So I was fortunate in the sense that, every part of my career decision-making has been like kind of stroke of luck. I found out about palliative. I knew at the time, even then, I wanted to eventually do something in kind of the intersection of technology and healthcare, and clinically, while I was pursuing palliative care, during my nights and weekends and residency, I did a lot of work kind of creating applications for the residents and the residents. I don't have a technical background, but I remember, again, like these are like these crystallized moments in my mind that kind of helped guide me towards where I am today. And when I was a fourth year medical student, I remember seeing an intern come in with the first iPhone into the break room. And this was like the iPhone that didn't have an app store. It didn't even have Wi-Fi. It was like basically a big iPod Touch, a big iPod, a phone, and a web browser. But just, it was such a shift in technology from the Palms that I had. I had like a Palm Central, if you remember those. I knew that it was going to completely change how we practice medicine. So when I was an intern, that was around the time that the first iPhone started having an app store. Mm-hmm. And because I didn't have a technical background, I actually reached out to a ton of local universities in Pittsburgh and found a class that would help me kind of make an app. I was like a business owner of the app. Mm-hmm. And realized very quickly that undergraduate classes are probably not the best substrate to actually get any like actual product out of, but it's a great substrate to find people. And ultimately made the actual application with a couple students from that class, realized this is like something that can be, you can actually have academic credit for it. You know, my first poster was about the app I built and submitted a regional SIGM. And kind of moved towards that direction during residency. Did it a couple times and ultimately made this application called Fast Facts for Palliative Care. At least at one point was one of the most popular, if not the most popular application, reference application for palliative care. during my time in residency, and I promise all of this is actually getting to answer your question, Jeff. I promise. Mm-hmm. During my time in residency, I realized that number one, I wanted to do palliative care. I wanted to do something in digital health. And although Pittsburgh is an incredible place for both technology and healthcare, it's also just a wonderful city with great food. You know, the intersection, the infrastructure for that intersection just wasn't quite there yet. And I'm pretty sure now it probably, but I knew I needed to go somewhere. If I really wanted to do this, I wanted to try to go somewhere where infrastructure was a little bit more. So when I was applying for palliative fellowships, I really focused on places where I thought that intersection could happen. And I was fortunate enough to do my fellowship in Boston at MGH at Dana-Farber in palliative. During my nights and weekends, I used the time. Again, I had no idea what informatics was. I had no idea. But I used my nights and weekends to go to different kind of entrepreneurial kind of events. I did a couple hackathons, including MIT Hacking Medicine's Grand Hack. And ultimately, actually won the Grand Hack back in, I think, 2015. And from that, started a company, which ultimately, you know, went down the venture back pathway. We raised some venture funding and it's still around. So a company called Cake. I guess I should probably have a disclosure. I do have equity in that company, but I'm not affiliate anymore. But learned kind of during that year, how to do kind of the entrepreneurial thing and start a company. And that was a great experience, a lot of fun. But one thing that I still wanted to know more about and learn more about is how do you do these things within the confines of the actual system? You know, a lot of what I had to do, as I've kind of laid out, was find resources outside of this to actually get these like digital technology, digital things I wanted to do done. And I remember I was rounding as a fellow in palliative care at the Brigham with my attending, who's now a close colleague. And I was known as like kind of the app guy, the nerd, you know, and for fellowship gifts for the holidays, we all got personalized coffee. And mine said, this mug is an app. That's like what I was known for. It's like being like digital. So my attending saw a flyer for clinical informatics as a fellowship that was starting up at the Brigham. Mm-hmm. And he gave it to me and he basically was like, hey, Mark, this seems like something that you'd be like really into. Look into this. And I saw the flyer for informatics and I think I had to Google what informatics was. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, that is exactly what I like to do. So I actually reached out to Adam Landman, who was the original program director for the fellowship. And is a mentor and also still my boss, just to kind of do a rotation during my palliative fellowship. I was so excited. I was like, oh, okay, well, elective. I didn't even know this existed. Like, how do you do this? And we got to talking and he was like, you should just apply for the fellowship. And I did. And was fortunate enough to get in. So that's kind of the pathway.
So do you feel like you were doing things in your fellowship that got the attention of the administration so that you could keep the job or get the job when you got out? Did they like you so much they just decided to keep you and then they found a place and they fit you in?
When I was a clinical informatics fellow, is that kind of the question? Like what?
When you were a fellow, what'd you do to get the, because right now you're in a job that people would, that, you know, most fellows would dream of, right? Working at, you know, a wonderful university doing, or not, you know, wonderful hospital system, doing innovation, people come to you to do exciting things and you help implement them.
Yeah.
And so that's not something that, you know, like most people, they leave and they get a job in a community setting and, or at least that's what I see. And maybe that's not reality, but most people get a job in more of a community setting where they have to, they sell themselves to an administration that is looking for someone to help them become more digital or help ease the implementation. But with yours, it seems as though you were, I mean, I don't think they gave you the job because you happened to be the only guy who was there. They gave it to you because you were innovating or... I don't know. Like, what do you think happened?
So number one, I think that a lot of anyone's career is your mentors and your support structure, and of course the work that you do. But I also think, I mean, just being very frank, I think there's just a lot of luck. And also, you know, it's not like I landed in my current role and what I'm doing just off of fellowship. You know, I think in retrospect, you can talk about it in so many ways, but there was a lot of uncertainty. During my, I was the first fellow in a unproven fellowship that, you know, and we had to define a lot. And I think that a lot of fellows in informatics, even in established fellowships, have to do similar things or experience things. You have to define your pathway. And at least in the fellowship that I did, it was very much a choose your own adventure, very project focused. And you kind of focused on the things that you were interested in, and you had kind of standardized didactic coursework. But your projects were kind of a combination of things that, one, you are interested in, the things that you bring in, and also the things that, potentially have alignment with the organization that interests you. Those are the ideal projects. So for me, the projects that I did were kind of a hodgepodge of those. You know, fortunately, I had already created this application called FastFacts, and we were still building on it. And we were doing, doing some analysis of the data. We got some nice publications from that work. So that was one of my projects. Another was, we were, as an organization at the Brigham, beginning to start exploring and playing around with making kind of mobile application. I feel so old saying this, but this was 2016, 2017. And, those applications, as an institution, we had not had any actual experience kind of developing them. Some of the initial kind of pilot applications we built were things that I did. They were not all very successful. In fact, my first project I did was an application that we built for the Burn Center. And it was a Burn application that enabled community sites to kind of contact Brigham Burn if they got a burn patient and get an immediate referral. And we got the requirements, worked with a third-party vendor, developer, did a great job. We built it to the spec of the kind of the clinical champion, and ultimately got very little use. And a lot of that was just that patient population and that use case happened so infrequently that when people actually needed to use the application, they just didn't know how to do it. So one of the first applications that I built was actually a big old failure. And I think that's a testament to, one, the mentorship and the support I had, I still have, and two, the environment that, it was a learning experience. And I think every time you build something, you have to be okay with these things like not working, and hopefully you learn and don't repeat mistakes. So the second application I built was a tool for the Brigham. The story of it was the COO for the hospital at the time saw a spill in kind of our main hallway. It's like our central connecting hallway. It's called the pipe. Mm-hmm. And he goes to my boss, who at the time was, I believe, still the CMIO. He might have been the CIO. I think he was the CIO. He goes to Adam and he goes, "Hey, Adam, how come there isn't like an application that I can use to like alert when there's a spill on the fan?" Adam says, "That's a really good." He calls me up and he goes, "Hey, Mark, how come there isn't an application where I can, call?" So we built a thing. I called it Fix It. And we learned from a lot of the stuff that we did with the Burn application to make it more accessible. So we made a web-based application very late. It did the one thing. And we did a much more agile kind of development process. And it became a pretty incredible success. In fact, actually grew it out. And now it's the internal Brigham kind of employee tool. It's called Brigham at its best. And we still support it. We extended it to Faulkner. So, from kind of these early stage projects that weren't as successful, we were able to kind of parlay that knowledge into kind of successes, new projects. And, for me, how I got my first job was, I think, based, like many informatics fellows that end up staying within their organizations, was based on my previous work, right? So, and there was a need. I kind of defined my niche, which was making custom kind of developed solutions for the organization. And when it came time to looking for my next step after fellowship, you know, I knew I wanted to do something in kind of developing applications. Ideally, I knew I wanted to stay involved in, and I wanted to ideally do something in innovation. And when I was looking, you know, Jeff, you mentioned a lot of people have to sell their value as, you know, just to kind of optimize the existing clinical, like EHR stack and things like that. Imagine having to sell your value in not doing any of that, but making apps and stuff. Like,
yeah,
that's a really hard sell. Mm-hmm. So, again, a testament to just kind of the support I had. I think I was able to get a small percentage of my time kind of covered to do to do this one as the medical director of digital health. And I treated my first 2 years. So when I initially kind of came out of fellowship, I had a clinical role in palliative care, which I had secured many moons before. And I think the real truth of the matter, especially if you want to stay in within an AMC, you know, I think you should, and the advice I tend to give people who reach out to me is, whatever step you're in, you should like ideally think like, if I stopped as an internist, would that be enough? And if you can honestly say yes, then you'll be okay. And for me, each step that I did, that was like a barometer. If I stopped as a palliative care, if I stopped my training in palliative care, would that be it? And the answer, if I stopped in informatics. And each of those steps, you know, I think a good foundation, if you want to do informatics, is you want to also excel, do your best, and be clinically, because that's going to be the base that gives you kind of the cachet and the respect and like kind of the ground to work with your clinical colleagues that you see on the floors. You have them. I think you have more kind of you have more of a presence and more of an opportunity to kind of collaborate when they also consult or they work. Mm-hmm. People work with you on the floors.
Yeah.
So and also from a strategy standpoint, that enabled me to secure a percentage of my time coming out of fellowship with clinical clutch. Because again, when I started right out of fellowship, I think my breakdown was something like 40% or 50% clinical, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
30% informatics. And then the rest of my time, you know, I was fortunate enough that I had started this venture backed company, and I did a day a week there. It would pay me. We had money. I believe they still have money. At the time, we definitely had money. So that was kind of my breakdown, like 40, 30, 25.
So right now, what's your split?
80, 20. So
80 informatics.
80 informatics.
Is that what you like? That's a lot.
That's a lot of informatics or a lot of clinical or?
It's a lot informatics, at least. I find a lot of people have trouble getting that much time protected. Maybe they're...
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm very fortunate. I feel very lucky. And I think that from a clinical standpoint, any less than 20 seems not enough to like kind of be clinically active, especially in the academic side. And then, you know, I think... The 80% kind of encompasses both my roles in informatics, both within the iHub and at the Brigham, but also my role as an APD CI. So yeah. I think between all those things, it definitely covers the day.
Yeah. So so did they pay you the same for your time, the same percentage?
They don't. So I think my I'm in academics, so I don't think I'm making the big bucks, but I think I'm okay. You know, I think, but it is a differential. I would say palliative is not known as a big money maker, Jeff. So,
yeah.
So I would say, you know, there's some kind of combos in informatics where the informatics portion is, you know, at equal or actually the lower of the salary ranges. And then there are others where the informatics portion actually raises your salary, and I would say palliative is option.
Okay, so let's talk about what you like. Do you see yourself doing the same thing 5 years from now? Do you like your job, or I guess I shouldn't try to talk you into telling your bosses that you're leaving. I don't know what to do. I guess I came out wrong, but you know what I'm trying to say.
I think that, you know, I have no idea how I got this job. I feel like it's like so much of this has been luck and just being in the right place and help, you know, just try to be useful. I think the thing that I think the biggest challenge and the biggest thing I knew I had to prove in my first year out of fellowship was I need to be to the organization, or else or else like I can't justify it to myself. So I think that that's the piece that I'm constantly thinking about is how are the things that I'm doing, or now we as a collective group are doing, that provide utility to the larger world. And if I can't answer that, I think that's a problem. You know, I
so
think
how
that,
did you answer that your first year out?
Application. I mean, like that was you know, I had to be able to continue to provide worth and show value by helping support like custom application. And also I had a smaller role within the iHub and you know, try to be useful as a support in a clinical SME. And then certainly as I took on more and more leadership roles within both the iHub and the Brigham, that's like kind of one of the metrics. How are the things that we're providing value?
So the innovation hub is an investment. I would imagine they could consider that an investment in and possible revenue generation.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, like, I think it, you know, we've been fortunate that I think, you know, our ROIs have primarily been around kind of non-revenue generation and more kind of what are the other, you know, kind of value adds. But certainly, I think, you know, I tend to think of the work we do, and certainly during COVID, I think that the ROI we put the application bill have been pretty significant. So the our COVID attestation tool, we call it COVID, that was something, you know, I created. And, you know, we continue to support, develop and iterate a tool that we use to vaccinate, you know, all of MGB. It's a tool we use to monitor boosters. I literally did COVID pass when I came into this. It's integrated with our desktops and Epic and Kronos. So if you come into the site, you automatically see COVID pass. You have to do. And part of that is,
oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's super, it's pretty, actually we were one of the first groups to actually build one of these tools. We open sourced it, and the underlying technology was used at Penn. So University of Pennsylvania uses COVID Pass. New York Presbyterian used a version. I don't know if they're still using it. Others used it. Boston Children's at one point, Tufts. So it's been a pretty influential tool, and we still use it today. You know, as long as there's a DPH kind of requirement in the Commonwealth, it's very valuable. Help our clinicians and staff. And then on the other side, we also have pre-screen, which is kind of the patient and visitor version of COVID Pass that we also maintain on it.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Our system was really good about that initially. And then once the first couple waves passed, there isn't anyone at the door that I have to show my phone to that has the screen on it, the green screen or whatnot, and they haven't. And it definitely isn't integrated into my workflow. I like how you guys did that, that you log in and it makes you do that. That's a good idea, at least long as there's an outbreak.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think I think now we're thinking, we're kind of thinking about we're in COVID Pass 3.0, right? We did like a big UI update and like kind of separated some of the functions, because it's also how employees are able to get COVID testing at MGB. But also in the, you know, actually updated in about a week or two, we're also going to enable the ability to actually order an antigen test in COVID Pass. So you can just get it, as opposed to just going to a PCR testing, you just get an antigen. And we're putting in kind of decision support for return to work as a feature from occupational. You know, I think we're still building out some of these features, and, you know, there's a pathway where this could become more of a general utility tool, even outside of, we'll see. But yeah.
So it's, you know, when I first heard you talking about, you know, the Innovations Hub, I didn't think of it as much as being so operational, but I think that's
so useful.
Yeah. Useful. I didn't mean to say useful.
We're usually not that useful.
If you entrench yourself in what the hospital considers mandatory operational work, then they have to fund you because they need you.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was a very unique situation where we just had the right resources at the right time and the right leaders. So I think that was, you know, again, you know, there's a lot of luck, I would say, in a lot of these. luck in being in the right place and position yourself correctly. But I would say that, you know, our evergreen work, you know, I would not say COVID pass is an evergreen, like that just happened. We're grateful. I think that the more kind of evergreen value that we add is really being a place to enable like these incredible researchers, clinicians, and not just physicians, so scientists, nurses, physical therapists who like want to make apps or get like super excited about innovation. Is there an internal outlet to support that? And, you know, even if 99% of them just get like a snack from the iHub and ear to listen to them and mm-hmm. give them some kind of guidance, we've helped kind of release some of that kind of energy. And then the 1% become companies or have great partnerships or, you know, are able to execute their kind of digital research and get published. So, you know, there's, to me, those are like the value placement provide. And then certainly from our front door work, like kind of understanding the industry landscape, you know, being an SME for kind of utilities or tools that leadership or others might want to use. A subject matter expert. Mm-hmm. So you know, when wayfinding happened, there was just a leadership ask to enable digital wayfinding within the hospital. And, you know, the iHub did that diligence and looked at what the current standards were and what the best in class, did the bake off, and then ultimately helped kind of set the vendor that we wanted to work with, and we implemented, right? Like that's another place where we can add some value, where it's clearly not a tool that is ready to be operationalized fully, but like who's going to implement? And historically, you know, it's usually if a department or some business line has a champion that wants to like invest the time on top of what to do it, but we're just another resource that like that's our job. Like we want to do it because that's what we're doing.
Okay. Thanks for giving me your time. Before we finish, I've got my Super Six, which is my list of questions, rapid fire.
Yeah.
What's your favorite informatics topic?
My favorite informatics. This is not as rapid fire as I think you would like, Jeff. I think it has to be, I have to be on brand. It has to be innovation and change, man.
Change.
Yeah.
Okay. What's your pet peeve in informatics?
What's my pet peeve in informatics? So maybe not fully in informatics, but definitely in innovation is especially, and this is, you know, I think just running in an innovation hub and being a part of this for a while, we sometimes very much get into what I'll call navel gazing and like just kind of thinking like, well, what does an innovation hub do? And I sometimes feel like that can be that. Sometimes it's very, very constructive, but other times I feel like we're at the swirl.
All right. So you want to innovate. You don't want to. Yeah. You don't like to think about it. You just want to move forward. I keep thinking you should be an emergency physician next.
Do the thing, Jeff.
Do the thing. Okay. Favorite movie ever.
Favorite movie ever. Okay. The first one that comes to mind, I'm not sure it's my favorite, but so what I thoroughly enjoy is Eternal Sunshine for the Spotless Mind.
Mm-hmm. What do you like about it?
I think the conceit is great. Jim Carrey, I liked as a comedian, but also, you know, it was one of his more serious roles. And, you know, maybe I'm just a big, big old emo kid at the end.
You're a softie.
Great. It's a good movie.
That's great. Yeah. What is your favorite informatics study or book?
Favorite informatics study book? Pass.
Okay.
No, you know what? Actually, I'm just going to call it the Cimino Board Review. Sure.
Cimino Board Review book?
Because okay. It got me to pass the board. So
yeah, that's the goal, right?
Yeah.
All right. Any informatics regrets?
I mean, I've certainly had a lot of failure. And I think that I wouldn't regret them, though. I feel like you have to have failures to learn, right? And I think that's, you got to do it. So, no. In fact, my only regret is I wish I knew about informatics earlier. I guess it worked out.
Yeah, it's working out so far.
Yeah.
All right. What's your prediction for the future for informatics in 5 years? Your 5-year informatics prediction.
5-year informatics. So maybe I'll break it down to what is my 5-year informatics prediction for clinical informatics. I and maybe this isn't a prediction so much as, but I think that, you know, clinical informatics is an incredible specialty. Of course, I've drunk the Kool-Aid. I'm in it. I love it. It is too undifferentiated as a it's an umbrella term, and I think that eventually what will do the specialty, you know, some good is creating kind of tracks within informatics, especially for trainees. Because I think once that happens, you know, finding a job will be hopefully a little easier. People will be able to declare, I guess what I'm trying to get at, Jeff, is maybe like creating like more specialty or subspecialty within informatics that ultimately define what you, as we've talked about outside of this podcast, but you've seen, and particularly in this series you're going to run, all of us are informaticians, but we all do very different things. And that's fine, except for part of the challenge of finding a position, defining that, is that you're coming from a pretty undifferentiated field, right? Like, it's not like emergency medicine where it doesn't matter where you go. If you did an ACGME accredited emergency medicine residency, people have a general sense of what you're able to do, and you can just slot in, do ER, right? And
yeah,
and I just think that informatics as a field is we're gonna get there, but I think part of it is that the work is still so project-based and specialty-focused that, you know, outside of some of the clear pathways like operations, CMIO, that type of thing, the rest is pretty nebulous. Mm-hmm. So how do we get these pillars? Like, maybe CMIO is one pillar, but what's like the AI digital, what's that pillar? What's the innovation pillar? Maybe there is an innovation, but maybe what is it, right? Like, what's the extended reality metaverse pillar, right? Like, I'm making this up, but there's like a, what are those? And to me, I think that's like the next decade of clinical informatics as a field is subspecial.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about, I understand those concepts of there being different types of informaticians, but to actually formalize it into something that we communicate externally is an interesting idea. It reminds me of the fact that I applied for a CMIO job once in a city that I wanted to live in. And it was through Whitkiefer, one of these other companies. And they interviewed me, and the headhunter did. And then they said, and one of their questions was, tell me about your past leadership. And I said, you know, the thing about, you know, I mean, I was a leader of informatics at my, at the department level. And so I created applications and workflows and all that kind of stuff on a department level, but I wasn't their chair or the associate chair. And I didn't emphasize that part so much. I just emphasized the fact that I had influence over them. And I tried to make it sound as though, you know, I was their leader because I was indirectly their leader. And they said, well, but how many were your direct report?
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, wait, what? You're not. I said, well, none were my direct report. Right. Yeah. I mean, I kept a professional, but internally I'm like, why are you bugging me about this? You know?
Right.
And because right. I don't think of a chief medical information officer as someone that deals with direct reports. Do you know what I mean?
That's the inherent, that's just
influence.
The inherent issue, right? Like, our definitions are not like, even in like something like CMIO, where it can be an entry level or it can be like a super senior title, depending on where you are. It's like, these are the things that need to be kind of, this is the next 5 to 10 years. Like, hopefully these things will be more.
Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, they essentially excluded me because I didn't lead more than 20 physicians or 50 physicians or something like that. And I was real honest with them. And I did ask them, you know, like, oh, what are your cutoffs and how do you feel that way? Or, you know, why is that important? So I learned a lot from the process because I was, you know, I think I acted, you know, like a mature person in the discussion, but they also saw that they didn't feel like I was worth putting forward to there. Cause you know, they were going to pick their top two or three. And so I think it kind of surprised me. It's not something that I can provide for my fellows is an opportunity to be the person that's being directly reported to. So I, So I feel bad that I don't yet have that ability to run that track. But I, you know, we run more innovation and, you know, development and team-based work, that kind of thing.
No, I, you know, I try and I would say I shouldn't speak for any other field, any other special like fellowship other than I know of mine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my sense and the kind of guidance I give the fellows, your 2 years are going to be project-based and there's going to be a core curriculum through the classes like that. But your projects are going to define what you, right? Like, so like, yeah. Think about that. And, you know, you should think about how your what the story you're going to tell based on the projects that you do that will get you to the next, right? Mm-hmm. And if you want to do innovation, the first thing you should do is maybe take a breath and do you really want to do innovation? That's number one. But if you still want to do innovation, then you should like tell that story and like get the experience. It's the perennial chicken and egg with a lot of these, right? Like, well, like how do you become a leader if you don't have any direct reports? Well, I need to have direct reports to be, right? Like how do you do this? Or what is that next step out of CI fellowship? And even that is still not super defined. Like there isn't like a commonality at graduate CI fellowships. Some graduate and they come out as CMIOs, like straight up CMIOs. Others come out as ACMIs. Others come out as medical directors. Others come out as informatics. Like there isn't a standard, which is, you know, I'm not saying that there should be, but I think that this is all kind of diagnostic that some of our core kind of fundamental training pieces need to be further firmed up and defined because what we're seeing as an output is kind of heterogeneous. And maybe that's okay. And maybe that's to be designed. And frankly, I think it is okay right now. I think there's an opportunity in the future to potentially create a little bit more, guardrails is the wrong word, but maybe track, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's within fellowship or outside of it. I'd hate to add more training, but I think like, you know, especially if you're going into industry, you're defined by what you do and what you like, not what you're interested, you know, it's like that Venn diagram of, you know, what you love, what you can get paid for and what you're good at. And like, you know, ideally try to find some kind of merger. And yeah. if you can't, at least get what you can get paid for. Right. So, anyway.
Well, thanks, Mark. I appreciate your time. You get provided a lot of wisdom and your experiences are helpful for the list. So I'll get this put together and send it out. Any last words before we say goodbye?
No, other than it's a real pleasure. I think that these type of things are like just foundational to kind of recruiting more people into the field and also providing resources and guidance. It's super fascinating. I remember some of the when we were starting the AMIA Clinical Informatics Fellowship ACIF. I was pre-career, super early, and now I'm like I'm not old and crusty. Not yet, but I'm like beginning to get a little bit of crust. I feel like I'm like middle early. I think I'm technically five or 6 years. And I one of my really close buddies and colleagues, who I hope you'll interview here, once told me recently, which I think is some great advice, like at any age or any stage of career, that you know you want to think about like the work that you do, and ideally it needs to give you big intern energy. Right, like if you can't commit intern energy to the work that you're doing, maybe you should reconsider what you're doing. And I think that's just some of the most sage advice I've heard. So as I think about kind of the work I do and hopefully what others do, you know, take away and maybe every couple of years, like think about, is this work, you know, can I commit big intern energy? And if you can't, maybe it's a sign that you should.
Well, I'm sure most of our listeners are ready to give the intern energy. So that's great. So yeah. Thank you very much, Mark.
Of course. It's a pleasure.
Wrap up.
I'm honored at the quality of the guests who join my show. And let me ask some questions. Mark Zhang is no exception. It's nice he was able to build a reputation locally at the same time that there was a desire for institutional growth. I'm glad he was able to find success in a city where he wanted to make his home. All right, I'll see you next time. And if you have any suggestions for interviewees or topics, send them my way. Thanks.
Get paid for what you do.